Hello, it's Friday, 17th of July. I'm Hannah Pearson from Pear Anderson.
And I'm Gary Bauerman from Check In Asia.
And this is the Friday Rewind.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in to our very first Friday Rewind show.
Over the next 15 minutes, we'll deliver an express recap of five key talking points in Southeast Asian travel and tourism from the past 7 days. So let's get started. What's our first discussion point, Gary?
Well, our first discussion point, Hannah, is it's not been a great week for Thailand.
No, it hasn't, has it?
It hasn't. So, well, not a COVID-safe week anyway. So there's been three events that have made international headlines this week, the first of which was foreign diplomats have been banned from entering the country after the 9-year-old daughter of a Sudanese attaché tested positive after arriving from Khartoum. Now, the family arrived under special arrangements, which VIPs and foreign diplomats had at that time. But this has raised questions because the family came on an airliner that actually included 245 Thai returnees. When they arrived at Bangkok, they stayed in a condo. And they were actually cleared. Apparently, they'd actually taken tests before they traveled, went to a hospital afterwards, and the young girl is actually now diagnosed with pneumonia. But this has raised questions about, you know, what is the testing procedure? What are the protocols? And how does Thailand plug these gaps?
Yeah, exactly. And then they had this other incident earlier in the week with an Egyptian airman who somehow was COVID positive and managed to visit Rayong, which is south of Pattaya. And actually, they ended up testing 1,603 people in Rayong just to make sure they all came back negative. But yeah, there's definitely this question mark over how entry processes are and whether they're really sufficient. And I think what the knock-on effect is going to be is that this is really going to make them question whether they can implement travel bubbles. If you've got so many more travellers coming in, so many more leisure travellers, how can you keep an eye on all of those? It's going to be big questions to be asked.
Absolutely. At present, there are 11 exempted categories for foreign visitors to Thailand. Now, these are mostly diplomats. You know, you mentioned the Egyptian military, which were in Rayong province. But there have been questions asked in Parliament this week about how they actually maintain and uphold these exemption categories. And this story, I think, will keep rolling. Particularly, Hannah, there's another story as well that happened this week where two airlines, one was a Thai Lion Air flight from Bangkok to Guangzhou, and the other was a Thai AirAsia X Bangkok to Tianjin flight, so both to China. Now, China has suspended both of these flights for 1 week after 11 passengers tested positive for COVID-19 across those two recent flights. Now, the Civil Aviation Administration of China is able to implement these suspensions, and it's a one-week suspension for each flight if up to five people test positive from a flight. But if there's more than that, if it reaches 10 positive tests, that flight can be suspended for a month.
So this could have serious repercussions then for connectivity between Thailand and China.
Yeah, you would think so. You would think so. So let's move on to number two, Hannah. And it's not been a good week either for Vietnam Airlines.
No, I mean, we've seen this a couple of months ago that they were asking for a bailout, but they're going to the government again. They need a $518.18 million USD bailout, and they reckon that they're going to make a loss this year of $561 million. They also have said that they only think their flights, so this is domestic flights, are going to recover by 2021 and international flights by 2022. So they've got a very gloomy outlook on aviation, despite the fact that Vietnam are actually seeing one of the highest levels of domestic flight recovery in the world.
Yeah, I agree. I think this places into context, you know, one of the economies that seems to have been recovering the best in the region and handled the COVID-19, one of the best in the region as well. But the recovery is tough. It's tricky, isn't it? And I was reading that Vietnam Airlines is 86% owned by the government, and it's 8.6% owned by All Nippon Airways from Japan, who have said that they can't actually help out because they themselves have some financial difficulties to handle as well.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm pretty confident that the government will bail them out. I can't see them letting their flagship carrier go bust. But yeah, like you said, even Vietnam, which everybody is looking to right now as leading the way in terms of recovery, is struggling. What does that mean for countries who don't have that level of recovery?
Yeah, 100% agree with that. So let's move on to our third story, which is also an airline story. But this week, AirAsia came out fighting, Hannah.
Yeah, so they've actually, it's almost kind of the opposite of VNA. So Vietnam Airlines are saying they don't see flights recovering. 2022, AirAsia are predicting that next year they're going to be profitable. Tony Fernandez has come out and said he is bullish on this. He believes the Asian authorities are much, much smarter now with handling coronavirus, and they're aiming to raise 2.4 billion ringgit. But the markets seem to be agreeing with him too. We've had a lot of analyst firms coming out this week and saying, yes, we're still confident that AirAsia will survive, and that this auditor report that came out last week is, I think Tony said he doesn't look to auditor reports to run his airline, basically.
Yeah, I saw that. I noticed one of the aviation analysts who's been quite vocal and is quite impressive, Shakur Yusof from Endow Analytics. And he said that he believes that they will be able to get this funding because of its importance to the economy, and it is a market leader in Southeast Asia. But he did add the caveat that he thinks that they may be struggling to announce profits for the next few quarters. It looks like they want to raise 1 billion funds from financial institutions, most likely in Malaysia, but maybe in Southeast Asia, and then another 1.4 billion in equities. Now, Tony Fernandez this week has been on the interview circuit. I watched his interview with the US network CNBC, and as you said, Hannah, he said he sounds incredibly bullish in making this forecast that they can get into profitably next year. But he was asked to do that, how much capital do you need? And his answers were, I think, quite poignant. He said, it's a moving target. I'd be comfortable with 1 billion ringgit, but I'd be super comfortable with 2 billion ringgit. But we are well on the way to achieving those targets. He also added that part of that fundraising could be a government loan. He said that they'd made an application which is processing nicely. He also added that they will raise funds by various forms of equities, such as rights issues and placements. He said, we have many pies in the oven. So he is being very bullish. He is talking up the future. But he did add one caveat, which consumers will be obviously a little bit concerned about. He said that the turnaround in Southeast Asia, he believes, will be long lasting because the governments have actually managed the COVID prevention quite well. So he said it'd be a long lasting recovery, not stop and start. But he added, capacity is going to be reduced. Fares are going to go up.
The end of low-cost travel in Southeast Asia, perhaps.
Certainly as we knew it before, I would imagine, yeah, for some time to come, which is not great news. But, you know, we've said this before on the pod, Hannah, that we really want AirAsia to stay afloat because it has been so vital to the whole infrastructure of our region. And if it is bullish and they can raise that funding, then, you know, that will be a positive sign for the market in general.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so many secondary destinations within Southeast Asia rely on them for connectivity. So good is good news. Moving on to some slightly less good news, which is job losses. So two major companies this week have announced job losses, and that's Skyscanner and also Resorts World Sentosa. So Resorts World Sentosa have announced that they're cutting around 30% of its 7,000 employees as a kind of one-off measure. But apparently it was quite a sudden announcement. Employees weren't really expecting it. They were called to a town hall and told that they were being made redundant. But again, it's not really a surprising move, is it? It's such a major employer. But the only worry here that a lot of people have said is, you know, if Resorts World Sentosa, which is a company that owns things like casinos, which in theory is quite cash rich, if even they are starting to have to make these massive cuts now, what does that mean for smaller companies?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was, again, looking at an analyst from DBS was saying that they believe that the bulk of the redundancies will probably be in roles that are client facing. So like casino dealers, theme park ticket agents, and hotel housekeeping staff, you know, people that really need those jobs. And as you mentioned there, Hannah, you know, the Resorts World in Sentosa is one of two integrated resorts in Singapore, the other one being Marina Bay Sands. They haven't yet announced any job losses as yet, but we don't know what will happen in future there. But both of those two integrated resorts, they have exclusive licenses with the Singapore government. And those licenses were renewed last year up until 2030. But on the basis of an agreement that the two companies would invest jointly another 9 billion Singapore dollars in non-gaming expansion investments. Now, at the moment, that looks a huge target to reach. And if they don't make, the original agreement says that if they don't make those 9 billion joint investments, they will then be subject to different tax arrangements. Essentially, tax rates would go up for them. So they're in a very difficult position at the moment.
Yeah, I hadn't realized that about those conditions to having those licenses.
Yeah, and you also mentioned there, Hannah, Scotland-based online travel search and book service, Skyscanner, which, you know, it's been purchased by Trip.com, China's largest OTA, in 2016. And it's announced that it's cutting 20% of its global workforce. It's closing several offices, including Sofia and Budapest, and reducing its presence in Singapore and Miami. The company says that its revenues have been hit significantly by COVID-19 and that a full recovery to our previous scale before COVID-19 looks to be several quarters or possibly years away. That's a very gloomy forecast.
It is. I mean, as a meta search anyway, they're so reliant on airline bookings, and they're not even the ones calling the shots, are they? They're reliant on airlines and governments all restarting. So there's just such a massive chain there that, again, this is not surprising that they're going to have to make these cuts now, because they just don't know when airlines are going to be able to restart flights and when customers are going to start seriously hunting for flight tickets again.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that. But, you know, those are two big names that we've just discussed there, aren't they? Resorts World and Skyscanner. And that has a sort of psychological impact for the whole industry if these huge companies are struggling in the way that they are struggling, you know, the depth and the scale of the problems that they have financially. It doesn't send out a positive message to.
No. So let's end on some good news then.
We found some. That's great.
Yeah, we found some. We found some. So first piece of good news is that Southeast Asia have two more UNESCO geoparks. So this week, Lake Toba in Indonesia and Dak Nong in Vietnam have both been inscribed as UNESCO geopark status, which is great for them because that means potentially they will be able to develop it more as a tourism destination. And I know particularly Indonesia are doing a lot of development around Lake Toba anyway in terms of tourism infrastructure. So this is a really good move for them.
Yeah, it is. I was just looking through the UNESCO site, what they actually said. So they actually announced 15 new geoparks last week. There's one obviously in Indonesia, one in Vietnam. There are three more in Asia as well, two new ones in China and one in South Korea. But it actually, I like the descriptions that it gave to Dak Nong, which is in the central highlands of Vietnam, which apparently features spectacular craters, majestic waterfalls, and Southeast Asia's most extensive system of hundreds of magnificent volcanic caves. If that can't lift us up, Hannah, nothing else can. And Lake Toba in Indonesia is located in Sumatra, and it was formed by a supervolcano. It's the largest volcanic lake in Indonesia and is situated 904 meters above sea level. And I read somewhere, I'm not sure if this is verified, that Lake Toba is actually bigger than Singapore.
Oh, I'm going to be Googling that after this. I'm sure our listeners will as well. And our last piece of good news, and this is in Cambodia. So Kampot, which is a destination, it's closer to Phnom Penh than many other destinations within Cambodia, has actually seen an increase this year versus last year, which is probably one of the few destinations in the world to be able to say that. So June saw 160,000 travellers versus last June just saw 80,000. And I think this is nice because it really demonstrates the positive impact, I suppose, of domestic tourism and travellers being forced to travel within their own country. So simply because Kampot is so close to Phnom Penh, I think that they are, you know, taking advantage of those travellers who are in the city and they want to get out and they want to experience the countryside. It's famous for its durian, so people are getting out there going to taste that yummy durian that they all love. Yeah, and that's a good story, I think. You've got destinations like Siem Reap that are obviously way, way below what they were last year. But at least somewhere, someone is experiencing an increase in tourism.
Yeah, that's good news. Great black pepper as well. Kampot black pepper is fantastic.
That's true. I'd forgotten about that. So that brings us to the end of this week's debut edition of the Friday Rewind. We'll be back with our usual podcast show, the Southeast Asia Travel Show, next week. And the Friday Rewind will return on the 31st of July.
Yeah, in the meantime, you can catch up with all our previous episodes on the website, theseasiatravelshow.com, or on Spotify and Google Podcasts. Just search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show on either platform.
So that's a wrap for the Friday Rewind, and we look forward to talking Southeast Asian travel and tourism again with you very soon.
Yeah, thanks very much. Bye-bye.